Coming up on Golf Today, Nelly Korda begins the year as the number one player in the world, but will she be there at the end of the year? Get off the fence, people, and state your case. What about Victor Hovland? Does he have number one potential himself? Does he now? And if he does, what must happen with his game for him to get there? And NBA champ Kyle Kuzma stops by to talk golf and NBA life in the bubble, rubbing elbows with LeBron and having TV cameras film his golf swing. Don't be nervous. We're all friends here. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It's Golf Today. It's January. I'm Shane Bacon. That's Damon Hack. D-Hack, we got a lot of golf on the schedule this week. It kind of feels like we're back into it.
Before the show, you were talking about how much you love this time of year, kind of setting the table for the rest of the year. You got great PGA Tour golf, LPGA back in action, the 15 over set at Huala Lai. I mean, we got a lot of golf to watch and talk about this week.
Can you say it one more time for me?
Huala Lai.
I love when it rolls off the tongue. You know, this is just, it feels traditional. You know, golf is a sport that has a lot of tradition, but the start of the season each year, especially on the PGA Tour for me, I mean, you know where you're going. You know you're going to be in Hawaii and you're going to get the primetime golf. You know you're going to go to Palm Springs. You know you get Riviera and Pebble Beach. Some of the great golf courses on the PGA Tour schedule, kind of all in that first 2 and 3 month timeline. And of course you get the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which is one of my favorite events each and every year. It's one of the wildest golf events that we have, if not the wildest golf event. All that kind of packed in this short time of the schedule. That's why early in the year is my favorite.
All these tours have races and you're trying to kind of put yourself in the right spot to make a move, make it to the season ending this or the big money that. These tournaments are important.
Mentioning all the tours, all the tournaments, take a look at what's happening this week. And look at that. Everything's out there. We're all playing golf.
I like this. This gives us more to talk about, more to chew on. PGA Tour out in the California desert, the American Express. Got the LPGA Tournament of Champions. Got the celebs.
Celebs are in.
And the stars together.
You got where's the PGA Tour Champions at?
Huala Lai.
Goodness.
Oh, fantastic. That black volcanic rock is really, really cool. DP World Tour. Got the Abu Dhabi HSBC. I think Rory's got four runner-up finishes there, so maybe breaks
the seal.
Then you got Korn Ferry Tour Wednesday finish out of the Bahamas.
Talk a little LPGA. Spent a lot of time last week talking about the PGA Tour and getting prepped for the season. How about spending some time on the LPGA Tour? When we talk LPGA at this point, we got to talk about the number one ranked player in the world.
Yeah, this is the Gainbridge LPGA Lake Nona. That was her fourth career win for Nelly. First time her folks got to see her in person win on the LPGA Tour. There's Big Sis Jess always there for her. Of course, Big Sis Jess had won earlier in the year at Four Seasons.
And this was kind of the start of what we saw throughout the season, was Nelly being dominant, leaning on the distance and the length and her ability to kind of hit those irons like Colin Morikawa does. And then when the putter just was even alive at all, we saw her getting contention and run away with some of these golfers.
Yeah, becoming number one player in the world, winning her first major, hit that incredible 7-wood, you'll recall.
Call that shot of the year, right? Told you that?
Best shot she told me that she's ever hit. Hits a couple of feet, almost made albatross, of course, ended up making an eagle, beat Lizette by 3 shots. Then, of course, the Tokyo Olympics, where she's the number one player in the world. She's expected to win the gold medal, and that's exactly what she goes out and does.
I mean, this is Tiger-like stuff. Mm. It's so hard to live up to expectations in a sport that is so chance-oriented, right? I mean, you can get bad bounces, and putts can't drop, and they can lip out. And to show up at a golf course and a golf tournament, the Olympic Games, and be expected to win and to go out there and take home the gold medal. I mean, you talk about a season, and she was not done yet.
Yeah, she was not done. This is the Pelican toward the end of the year back in the state of Florida. Made that triple on the 17th, bounces back, ends up outlasting Lexi and Lydia and Se-Young Kim. Fifth win overall on the year, fourth on the LPGA Tour.
And I would argue that was the most impressive, just with what you said, the way it was going down at the end, her ability to bounce right back after that brutal 7 on the 17th hole, her ability to make birdie there at the 18th, birdie in the playoff, reminding everybody who Nelly Korda is. And you see there, and the focus of this conversation, I can only imagine, is not just going to be about Nelly Korda, but it'll be about Jin Young Ko. And you see there at the bottom, the gap between number 2 in the world and number 3 is as large as the gap between number 3 and number 54 in the world. Right now, we've got two names that we're really focused on.
So let's state our case. I mean, who's going to be the number one player in the world at the end of 2022? Because I got some pretty good ideas, and I'm going to stay right there. I think it's going to be Nelly Korda.
Well, just with the consistency, I'm going to go Jin Young Ko, and I'll get into it in a bit. But okay. I want to hear your case for Nelly Korda because we saw a different type of player last season.
It's not just the stats, and she's long off the tee and accurate and fantastic off the greens. I was fascinated in December. She played alongside her father, Peter Korda, at the PNC Championship, and Peter was asked, you know, what's it like kind of having this family of superstars? You know, what do you guys talk about? What do you do? And Peter said, you know what? We don't share what goes on at the kitchen table. And I was struck by that. This is December hit and giggle. And Peter Korda, a major champ in his own right from the tennis world, won an Australian Open, is saying, we keep that discussion, those talks, to ourselves. And I think that's one reason why, in addition to being 6 feet tall and having long levers and incredible skill, there is a focus and a passion that this family has and that Nelly seems to have in spades, that she is comfortable in this position, can comfortable with the expectations, as we saw over the summer, becoming number one, winning that major, winning that gold. I think she is comfortable in this spot. She has the skill set to match, the family to match, and the mindset to match. I just think that her skill set is slightly ahead of Jin Young Ko.
Well, the skill set, I mean, is as good as anybody in golf right now. When you really dive into Nelly Korda and what she did last season, she was seventh in average driving distance. She can hit the ball miles. She was fifth in greens in regulation and 14th in putts per green in regulation. There was no player on the PGA Tour that finished in the top 15 in driving, iron play, and putting last season.
There you
go. You're talking about a total, complete player. And Nelly Korda, I've always been impressed when those players take a leap. And you talk about being comfortable. That's a family where at times you can feel uncomfortable. You're sitting there going, I just won a tournament. My sister is one of the best players in the world. My brother's playing in Grand Slam tennis tournaments. Yeah. My parents have accomplished so much. I've got to continue to push. That is where I see Nelly's kind of family base being so important for her to not kind of be content and complacent with what she's done in her career. I feel like the family's going to keep pushing her.
She's only been out there a few years. That's the thing. I don't think we've even kind of tasted complete, you know, incredible potential that she has to take her game to another level. A 5-win season, an Olympic gold medal, a major championship, running to be number one player in the world is a huge accomplishment. But I think she still has room to improve. She was disappointed in how she ended the season last year, and the fact that she was a bit exhausted, and the fact that Jin Young Ko caught her at the tape at the end of the year in terms of all those awards that she was trying to win. So I think that Nelly Korda enjoys the chase. One thing that her dad did say is, I want my kids to pursue their dreams with passion and hard work and to put in the time and to not make excuses. And I see Nelly Korda as a person who enjoys the chase, because you have to enjoy putting out the time in the gym, on the golf course, and on the driving range. And I think she does all of those things.
No Olympics this year for Nelly Korda. No Solheim Cup this year for Nelly Korda. So she can spend more of the time kind of on the individual events and a little less energy in terms of the travel and some of those big tournaments. The reason I'm going Jin Young Ko is the consistency we've seen from Jin Young Ko. You think about the way she started the season last year. It was not great. The way she finished it, 9 starts at the end of her year, 5 wins, a second, 2 sixth place finishes. I mean, she was in contention each and every week. And this wasn't just 2021, D. 2020, she played just 4 events, finishing the top 5 in 3 of those events. 2019, she starts the season, first 6 starts of the year. She has 2 wins and 5 top 3 finishes. In my opinion, Jin Young Ko is the best player in the world, no matter male or female, when it's clicking, when things are working. Every week she goes out there and finds herself in the top 5 when it's going well. And if she can just build on what she had at the end of 2021, I see her starting the season much like 2019, red hot, pick up a couple of victories, and make Nelly come catch her.
The high level of consistency, the bogey-free rounds consecutively, the 14 straight rounds
in the 60s,
ending the year on a run of greens in regulation, the final event, you're exhausted. You've got Nelly Korda, you know, chasing you down, and Nasa Hataoka, and all these studs in the LPGA, and for her to finish the year by not missing a green on that golf course, it just speaks to the high level of consistency. And the thing I love about these two players, Nelly and Jin, they do it completely differently.
Agreed.
I mean, Jin Young Ko is incredibly accurate with her hybrids. Even though she's going to be farther away from the green, she's very accurate with her hybrids. And if she has to hit a kind of a middle iron compared to a wedge from Nelly Korda, she's still going to find a lot of accuracy with those clubs.
You remember we got to watch Rory and Jordan Spieth in that pairing at Augusta National a few years ago. And to me, this is a little bit of what that feels like. You've got Nelly kind of playing Rory in this regard, right? I mean, Nelly can hit the ball as long as anybody out on tour. She can lean on the distance, but every part of her game is complete. complete. Yes. And you've got Jin Young Ko, who feels to me a very Jordan Spieth-like, an unbelievable iron player and a great putter in and around the greens, can kind of beat you in ways that maybe you're not watching, maybe you don't see. It is the rivalry we wanted in golf. This is it. I mean, this is what you hope for. You've got two players from two different areas that can win a lot, that can win major championships, that get in contention so often that you're going to see their names on these leaderboards. This is so great for the LPGA in 2022.
So these are two players that, you know, they're on the radar.
Right.
You know, air traffic control can see Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko. How about an under-the-radar player to make a move in 2022?
I'm going to go Leona Maguire, if that's fair in terms of player under the radar.
Okay,
40th in the world. Has not won yet on the LPGA Tour. And that's really the reason I'm taking her here, because she's still looking for that first victory on the LPGA Tour. But it was a breakout performance at the Solheim Cup this past year. She's the best player at Inverness, the way she got it going, 4.5 points, went 4-0-1, starts the week by beating the Kordas. You know, with Mel Reed, beats Nelly again, 5-4 in on Sunday. I mean, what her ability to do in that match, in that kind of world. I mean, it's so much pressure. Players playing for so much. You can see players kind of fall off, and she stepped up and showed it. Shot 62 a month later, kind of open an LPGA event. I feel like she's kind of on that trajectory to not just win once, but potentially win a couple times.
I'm going with another Solheim Cupper, but a U.S. Solheim Cupper. Yalimi No had a fantastic summer. At one point, had three top 10 finishes in four starts, including the Scottish, including the Evian. She was a fantastic player as an amateur. She's 20 years of age and also a fantastic ball striker. I mean, she's 27th in driving distance. She was 9th in eagles. She is someone who has the resume in terms of being a young player with a lot of great expectations. I think this is someone who is trying to learn how to win on the LPGA, won a lot as an amateur, played very well over the summer, and was in that mix in that final round at that Evian when we saw that Jung Lee 6 started to back up a little bit, Minji Lee able to win that major championship. But I look at Yalimi No as someone under the radar now who won't be in 2022.
Players that win, D, we talk a lot about this. I mean, learning how to win is a skill, learning 100%. How to win at a young age, beating who's in front of you. I mean, that's all you can do as a professional golfer is you beat the field, you beat the players that are there, who's kind of continuing with you in a final round. That's a player that wins and has won and will continue winning her career.
And how about the major championship venues that we have for the LPGA coming up? I mean, we've talked about the growth of the women's game. The Chevron Championship says goodbye to Mission Hills Country Club. You got Pine Needles. I love Pine Needles, by the way. Christy Kerr won back there back in the day. I covered it for the New York Times. Congressional Country Club, the Blue, Bethesda, Maryland. You got the Evian, of course, and then Muirfield in Scotland hosting the Women's Open. So who's the best player without a major championship?
We're talking Kordas on the show. Talking about Nelly Korda. I'm going to go Jess Korda. Six wins on the LPGA Tour. Seven top tens in major championships. Four top six finishes in major championships. Had a run a couple years ago where she was really in contention at a lot of majors. I feel like, again, going back to the family dynamic and what you said about Nelly, I feel like the same about Jess. She's only going to be pushed. I've got a comp for Jessica Korda here. Marco Mira. Marco Mira, you remember back in the late 90s, Marco Mira was a great player.
Yes.
He won a lot on the PGA
Tour.
Where
are you going with this?
He was being pushed by the best player in golf. He got to see Tiger Woods each and every day. He got to see how he prepped, how he practiced, how he played. He got to lose money to Tiger Woods out on the golf course. And he realized, I've got to tighten up some things if I want to contend. I can't beat this guy with my game right now. Jess wakes up every day and gets to go out and practice and play with the best player in the world. She's only going to improve from that. I feel like Jess might lean into a Marco Mira 98 type season.
I was going to say, let's lean into it. Is she going to win two majors this year like O'Meara did in 98?
I think she's the best player without a major. I think she's going to play herself into the conversation. I'm not saying she's going to win a major this season, but I just say you can't be beside a sister that's the best player in the world and not continue to get better, because you're competitive, you're an athlete, you're from an athletic family. You're only going to try to improve the things that aren't working for you. It's got to help to have Nelly there. It can't be a detriment.
It's a little like Serena Venus energy. You know, you got Peyton and Eli. How about Arch, their nephew, by the way, this high school quarterback? Just wait, you'll be hearing about Arch Manning in a little while. I digress. How about Nasa Hataoka?
This is your player.
That's my player. She's a five-time winner on the LPGA Tour. Was a runner-up to Yuka Sasso, you'll recall, at the U.S. Women's Open. She's 0-4 in LPGA playoffs. That's something that obviously has to improve. But she has five top tens in majors, has the game number six, so she's the highest ranked player in the Rolex ranking without a major championship. To me, it's Nasa Hataoka. powerful player, and I think she will break through and win that major championship.
You're only going to get more comfortable in majors when you're there, right?
Yes.
You're only going to get comfortable in the moment, in the situation, in the tournament, understanding what it takes to kind of prep. I've been watching Man in the Arena. I know I've mentioned on the show a couple of times. And just hearing from Tom Brady and how he would prep the team for the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And he would tell teams, you know, this is going to be a lot more time. It's a longer game. Halftime's longer. The prep is longer. He would prep everybody for that.
Yes.
And if you're a player that has seen what it's like to get into contention at a major championship, every time you show up, that event gets more comfortable. That Sunday gets more comfortable. I think it's a smart pick.
And I love the Jess-Marco Mira comparison. And I think that Nasa, in some ways, will be lifted by Hideki Matsuyama and Mone Inami and this rise in Japan golf with Keita Nakajima. And we're seeing these players, amateurs and professional-wise, really, really take their game to the next level. I think that Nasa Hatooka is of that ilk.
Is golf getting better? Is golf getting more competitive?
It's so impressive how great these players are at the top of the game. And it's what a tough endeavor to have. I tip the cap every day.
We're going to talk about golf later in the program about how is it too easy for the professional golfer. All I'm saying right now, D, is golf's in a good space because every week we get an unbelievable performance from somebody.
A lot of birdies and eagles around the world. Back on golf today, it's time for the map. That's right, Rolex Series report. This week, the DP World Tour heads to Yas Link for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. It's the first tournament of the DP World Tour's annual Middle East Swing. It's the first Rolex Series event for 2022. It's increased purses, stronger field. It's all leading up to that DP World Tour Championship. Defending champ will be Colin Morikawa. I've heard of him. Fine young player.
I bet you hear all these names as well. Top 10 ranked player in the world in the field this week. Colin Morikawa's there. Ranked number 2 in the world. Victor Hovland's there as well. 7th in the world already. And Rory McIlroy coming in at number 8.
Fantastic. How about Victor Hovland? You mentioned he's a young player. Already has done a lot. In this game. He had a lot of great moments. This is not so great, but look at the smile on his face during the U.S. Amateur at Pebble. He just seems unbothered here. Watch this shot against Devin Bling from UCLA.
So this is one of those things. Like, nobody of our skill level is finding that golf ball. That golf ball is gone. Done. Adios. And they found it. He hit it to, 5 feet?
And the reaction, I mean, we've talked about his attitude, and I do think it truly is a 15th club, because he's been in spots of bother on the PGA Tour as well and bounced back.
Dominant in that U.S. Amateur win, 2019 Masters, low amateur, finishing a tie for 32nd that week, 72, 71, 71, 71, and then this at Pebble Beach. I mean, this kid's making history,
yeah. D. 2 months later, finished 12th thanks to shots like this at the 8th hole. Oh,
wild. So the lowest 72-hole score by an amateur ever in the U.S. Open broke Jack Nicklaus's record. Thanks very much at Pebble Beach.
Love that. Nicklaus said that approach shot is the best second shot in golf. So it all works together.
So showing some great amateur play by Victor Hovland. Then he turns professional. And, I mean, there's so many big names turning professional around the same time. Victor Hovland, Puerto Rico Open 2020, rolls in a 30-footer. To win by a shot.
Yeah.
That's his first win on the PGA Tour.
Has shown some flair in his young career, ability to bounce back from missed, chip shots or a mistake. This at Mayakoba. Birdie on the last again
to win. To win by a shot.
I mean, talked about the skill set of closing.
Finding a way to be your best at the end is a rare skill set, even in the professional game. We saw what Hideki did on Sunday at the Sony. You hit the best 3-wood you've hit in so long under pressure, right?
And this is the BMW International 2021 19-under. And think about this, Shane. This is someone who's part of that class with Morikawa and Wolf, Justin Suh. And I think for a while he might have been third or fourth on that list in terms of where you think he's going to go, how good he's going to be. And I think he's right in the conversation, obviously behind Colin Morikawa, but he is working his way up the official world golf
league. Yeah, trajectory on the way up. It's like buying a good stock is Victor Hovland right now. He's just 24 years old. Again at Mayakoba, wins, shoots 23 under, defends his title. First person to defend his title in that event. You get a couple of those awesome trophies in your house. And, it's just comfortable. He doesn't get out of place. He just wins no matter the field, no matter the event, no matter where it's at. This at the Hero, if you remember, just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, 14th hole. Makes that for eagle, wins by a shot over Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, the way he's winning, D. I mean, just dominating performances. He ran through that U.S. Amateur, trailed in one match for one hole the entire week to win the Havemeyer, and then he turns professional, and he's doing similar things.
Yeah, and he's been critical. You see that last one, the stroke scan around the green, 168th in 2020, so 124th last season, but it still is a spot of bother, something he's working on, something he has voiced to us. So one of the questions we had, our buddies at PointsBet saying, hey, a little name a bet.
Yeah, I threw this at him late last year, if you remember.
Right?
Yeah.
Number one.
Will Victor Hovland get to number one in the world? And I mean, you know, you think about how many players there are that are up there, and you got to pass a Colin Morikawa and a John Rahm and all these names. And that is quote unquote only plus 650. I feel like PointsBet agrees with me on this.
Yeah, I love the name a bet. I think there's just too much thick talent at the top for Victor.
A lot of traffic.
A lot of traffic. You got detours, you got flashing lights, and you got traffic cone. I mean, listen, he is a fine young player. But when you're looking at the likes of John Rahm and Colin Morikawa, we just saw what Hideki Matsuyama did. Xander Schauffele, JT. I mean, he's number seven right now. And you look at these players, you know, John Rahm, major champ. Morikawa, major champ. DJ, major champ. Cantlay, FedEx Cup champ. JT, major champ, FedEx Cup champ, players champ. I mean, you're talking gold medalist in Xander. I think that for Victor Hovland to become the number one player in the world, he's going to have to play better in the major championships. At this point, very young career.
Right.
Doesn't have a top 10 in the majors. And I think that there's a reason for that. I think it's because of his short game. I want to tell you something, Shane. Hideki Matsuyama ranked second in scrambling when he won the Masters. Phil Mickelson had positive strokes gained around the green every round at the PGA. John Rahm, top 10 in scrambling on the way to winning at Torrey Pines. Morikawa, third in the field in scrambling at the Open. It is a gap in the resume. It is a weakness in an otherwise sterling game. Can he turn it into a strength, or at least serviceable, to get to number one in the world? He's going to need that arrow in his quiver.
Needs a little bit of a better major resume. I'm not going to say a much better major resume. You mentioned no top tens. He's finished 12th a couple times and 13th, and he's never missed a cut in a major championship. He's played solid golf in majors. He just hasn't really got himself into contention yet, and I agree with you. You have to do that to be considered one of the best golfers
in the world. Well, when Colin Morikawa's there all the time.
Correct.
And John Rahm is there all the time. I just don't see those guys giving up much.
Agreed with you.
I mean, so I think that Victor Hovland would have to do something very, very special this season. I mean, what do you see in the offing for him? Is it a major championship this year? Is it just more comfort there? Is it the 12th and 13th become second, thirds, and fifths in your mind?
I feel like you've got to get better in the majors and just basically getting better in terms of getting yourself in contention in the major championships.
Okay.
Because, again, that has been the hole in the resume, if there is a hole in the resume to this point. I mean, he's only played two full seasons of major championships to this point. Really, it is the short game. Everybody's got holes in their games. I mean, every great player even. Jack Nicklaus, not the best pitcher of the golf ball. Tiger Woods at times would struggle with the driver and finding fairways with the driver. For Victor Hovland, it is around the greens. When you dive into his stats and you look at his ability to hit the golf ball, fifth in strokes gained off the tee last year, 18th, and second in his qualifying seasons on the PGA Tour off the tee. When you look at around the greens and approach to greens, the around the greens is the hole. I mean, he's just not a great chipper, but he's improving. Now, you and I have talked about improving. Do you need to be fifth in the world at something like this? I don't think Victor Hovland needs to be fifth in the world. He's too good of a ball striker to ever really get that high in terms of the statistical category in a way. But if you continue to improve this, you go from 160 to 120 to 100th to 80th in pitching. Yeah. That, to me, is all he really needs to do. He's got to clean those portions of the game up. And if that improves, everything else is going to improve a little bit. And he's going to go from 7th to 5th to 4th to potentially 1st in the world. There isn't much you can do when you get to this point.
Yeah.
When you're this good. When you're this polished and you're this qualified, you've just got to do little things.
You can't play defense either, though.
Right.
You can't block John Rahm's shot at this point. You're not going to tackle Hideki Matsuyama.
You can try.
And maybe some have at some point in this great game. But I just think because of those deficits, and I wonder, you know, when you look at a Colin Morikawa, when I think about his open, I think about his scrambling.
And
I think about the fact that he was, you know, he had Jordan Spieth breathing down his neck, and Colin Morikawa would not be denied getting up and down, saving shots around the green, and like you said, making the putts when it counted. I just wonder, on those stressful Sundays, on these golf courses that ask the biggest questions. That's when we're going to see, you know, if 124th can be 80th or 70th, because those golf courses are harder. The stress level is higher.
You miss more greens.
You miss more greens, and the players are better, and the ranking points are obviously thicker and higher as well. So I just wonder, putting himself alongside a John Rahm or a Justin Thomas or Hideki Matsuyama, will he be able to hang and miss greens and not spend shots?
A lot of the names you mentioned were at the Hero late last year. Yeah. We showed the one highlight, but there were multiple highlights of great pitches from around the green. And those were the things that stood out to me on his way to victory there, is he hold a bunker shot. And he's hitting, you know, difficult chip shots. The ones that you want to get up in that five-foot circle, he's hitting them to 2 feet.
Yeah.
And he's hitting them to kick in. Those are important things to carry into 2022. Yeah. For Victor Hovland, the last time we really saw him out there being competitive and getting in the hunt, the chipping did not go away. Now, that's the Hero. And you're talking about the Masters and the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. I thought you made a great point about Colin Morikawa, though. Colin Morikawa has won two major championships, and both time he led the field in putting.
Yeah.
This is the part of his game that lacks at times. When he turns that into a strength, he's unbeatable. For Victor Hovland, if he can somehow turn the pitching into a strength at these high-level events, that's when we see, to your point, 12th turn into third.
Love the fact he's not in denial. He knows there's something he has to work on.
He says it openly.
He says it, and his attitude is a powerful 15th club. Golf Today rolls along on this Tuesday. If you're a Hoops fan, I know you are, you know the name Kyle Kuzma. Wizards power forward, won an NBA championship with the Lakers, my Lakers, before he was traded to the Wizards in 2021. 6'9", 221 pounds starting forward, began his golf journey in the midst of the 2020 NBA bubble.
Yeah, D. Scratch and Roger Steele recently hit the tee with Kuzma at Washington, D.C.'s historic Langston Golf Course. Kuzma connects the dots from basketball to golf and explains how spending time on the course has helped his mental approach and, in some cases, his touch on the court. And Kyle Kuzma joins us now. Kyle, what was the bubble golf scene like down in Florida?
That was like the Hollywood of the bubble. It was where everyone was out there golfing at some point, because, you know, in the bubble, we had limitations of where we wanted to go and where we actually could go. So, like, the golf course, that was like, you know, us being on the yard for an hour a day. And, you know, everyone was out there playing. So it was great.
Gotta love golf. It's an outdoor sport. So how did you get connected with golf in the first place? Who gave you the club, said, hey, Kyle, let's do this. Let's go out and play some golf.
Well, you know, it really, for me, it started in the bubble, actually. You know, I used to golf a little bit in college. You know, I had a bunch of golf buddies that played at the University of Utah where I went to school. And, you know, just being in the bubble and being around, you know, actual golfers that really played, you know, that were, of course, you know, either coaches or players, you know, really just sparked me in a different sense of, you know, what the game of golf really is. And I've just fell in love with it ever since.
Are we in a situation now where you're traveling with your golf clubs? Are you playing some golf on the road, or is this strictly business?
Oh, for sure. We were just in Orlando, and I played down there at Bay Hill. So, you know, I try to take them everywhere we go, that one, I have time, and two, that's warm. So
how much in advance are you calling golf clubs, hopping on websites, trying to book tee times, or does somebody do that for you?
You know, I have someone that does it for me, but, you know, I'm initiating it. I'm like, you know, I'm going to be here. You know, this is what the schedule says. I may be in Houston in 5 days, so let's figure it out. Because, you know, I might have a window to play nine. You know, it's kind of hard during the season to play 18. Because, one, during the season, I really don't like waking up early. And, you know, we get to a city at one or two. You know, I can play sunset golf, so.
I know someone that does it for me. It's Shane Bacon. He knows a lot of people, has a lot of access to some great courses. So what's it like having Scratch chronicle your love of the game? You know, what's it been like having cameras following you around? It's one thing to do on a basketball court. What about the golf course?
Well, at first it was a little intimidating because, you know, basketball, it's easy to have a camera around because, you know, I'm confident in what I do. I'm not saying that I'm not confident in golf, but, you know, much more confident in basketball. But, you know, it's been great. You know, obviously I'm getting better and better, and just finding that love and passion, you know, has, you know, allowed me to be on this show and for people to, you know I like golf. So, you know, I'm just having an extreme amount of fun with it and enjoying everything. So
Kyle, you got a chance to play alongside LeBron James. When you're around a legend like that day to day, week to week, what's the one thing that stands out that's unique to a LeBron James that maybe you don't see in other people?
You know, just his preparation every single day. You know, not calling him a robot, but he does the same things every day, whether he takes care of his body, his business acumen, obviously his basketball acumen, but, just the way he approaches life every day. It's something that is very, very rare and unique. When you talk about people having daily routines and what makes them successful. And, I got to see it up close and personal, so it was great.
Kyle, I'm a sneaker fan. I buy way too many shoes. I've always been interested in this question for a professional basketball player. How many pairs are you keeping? How many pairs are you giving away? How many stay in the locker room?
Man, it's never ending, honestly. You know, for me, I switch my shoes every game. So I'll wear a fresh pair every game. So if you think about that, that's 82, part of practice. I might have a 15 pair rotation throughout practice. Throughout the year. So, I'm having tons of shoes. I rarely don't keep too many. I just had a 20-point, 20-rebound game, so I'm definitely going to keep those shoes. But, any game that I had that has, significance, I'm keeping the shoes.
Love it. One of these days, you and Shane should compare shoe collections.
This is better.
Pretty good endeavor. Hey, Kyle, thanks for the time, man. Best of luck the rest of the NBA season and on the golf course as well. Many birdies and eagles coming your way.
Oh, trust me, I need it. I need it all, so I appreciate it.
Just wrapped up a couple of weeks in Hawaii where the scoring was bananas low. With that, it's worth bringing back one of my favorite Damon Hack takes. Is golf too easy for the pros? It's a hot take. It'll be a blazing conversation. Come on back. Coming up on the second hour of golf today, golf, man. Golf's hard, really hard for us. Not so much for the pros, low scores, record numbers. So I teed Damon up on a simple question from last year. Is golf too easy? Plus, APGA member Aaron Beverly joins the program to talk about receiving the Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption and the Genesis Invitational next month. And with Colin Morikawa in the field this week, we dive into world number two and what would make for a good season for the two-time major winner. We continue for 59 more minutes and not a second longer. Call it 59 watch. Golf Today continues.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
58 minutes and change now, Damon Hack, alongside
right.
Shane Bacon, another hour of golf today. A lot of golf on the calendar all over the globe. That's how we like it.
You know what, though? This is what I've been excited about.
I know.
This was floating around yesterday in the offices. It was floating around in email. Damon Hack bringing back one of the hits from last year. We've seen some incredible scoring with players in Hawaii shooting 30 under and not even winning this golf tournament. So we asked the question, is golf too easy for the pros? This from a year ago.
It feels like a golf course you see at an Open Championship, right? When the wind's up, it's tough. Remember Rory McIlroy a few years ago at the Open? He shoots 63, then shoots 80 the next day because the winds were up. I mean, that's how fast things can change. You need wind at Wailea or it's basically defenseless. It reminds me of so many golf courses near the water, National Golf Links, a Seminole. If it blows, it's brutal. If it doesn't blow, it's gettable. Wailea is much like that.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see a lot more of this, the way that the game is going in terms of the equipment, the strength of these players, all the advantages that they do have. And it's not to take anything away from their skill set. They are fantastic players, but it's fun for me to see a little wind on the golf course, a little rain on the golf course. Speaking of Scotland, they say if it's nay rain, it's nay wind, it's nay golf. Golf.
They want it to
be
nasty.
They want some elements. So I'm happy to see it at Wailea and happy to see these players pushed and prodded a little bit today.
A D, low scoring. In the middle of January, we're seeing numbers and records fall. Look at this, 72-hole scoring record at the 2020 Masters. That's the one played in November. Lowest single round scoring average on the PGA Tour since 1983 at the Sony this year. The average you see there, 66 in round three. Records at the Open, lowest score to par by a non-winner at the BMW. Golf continues
to get easier for these players.
Yeah, how about notable low scoring this year? 72-hole PGA Tour scoring record in relation to par. You know, tip your cap, Cameron Smith, 34 under. Previous record was 31 under par. Three players finished 32 under or better. You had Rombo did it, Matt Jones.
Shot 59
Smith
on the weekend,
I mean, right?
On the back nine?
Ernie Els, 2003, so long, 66.95 scoring average, final round at the Sony. Yeah, 62 from Jim Furyk, City One from Kevin Na.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Gonna take it back, D. Are we going to double down? I asked you a question you brought up on this program a year ago. Is golf too easy for the pros?
Way too easy.
Not just too easy, it's way too easy.
Birdies just aren't that special anymore. Birdies should be a little bit more special, I think. And we're seeing records fall this way and that. I mean, this is where the game is. We want to see some struggle. I want to see the player stand on the tee and have to make a decision. As much as we loved Hideki and, you know, taking that dog leg apart right. as he did, I still want to see a little more strategy involved in the way the game is. And the golf ball, I think, is the main culprit in the equipment. And Jack Nicklaus has been talking about it. He did a great podcast with my buddy Gary Williams on the Five Clubs. And he said, I've been talking about this since the 1970s, that the golf ball just goes too far. And he's waiting for this comment period with the USGA and this distance report to finally kind of get some teeth as well. I just think with these huge athletes that we have, we're talking Rahm, and we're talking DJ, and we're talking Hideki, and Bryson, and Brooks, that the game has become, at the highest level, it's just too easy. Lift Keeney in place? Sure.
Happens all the time.
Perfect conditions, optimal launch conditions, TrackMan, FlightScope, you know, choose your technology. The way these players play, they are way ahead of it. It's like they're ahead of the cavalry. You know, it's like, you know, they're hacking into the system before the security guys even know what's going on. And that's their job. And that's the equipment company's job, is to put the best equipment in the hands of these players. But 34 under without even breaking a sweat.
Lift, clean, and place needs to go. And I'm sorry, I hope pro golfers aren't watching the program right now, but it needs to go. I mean, just lose lift, clean, and place. Golf is a game of unpredictability. There's so many factors that play into it. You can hit a great shot, a great putt, and it cannot go in. It cannot find the putting surface. That's part of golf.
Yes.
I mean, that is the beauty of playing links golf. When you go over to Scotland or you go to Bannon Dunes and you hit a shot and you watch it run out on the ground and you hope it ends up where you thought it might, and you hope maybe it kind of bumps and bounds the way you wanted it to. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. That is what golf kind of felt like for a long time. Right now, it just feels like these guys are so prepared. I think about going to a golf course and warming up. You know, regular golfer goes 25 minutes or 30 minutes before the round. They hit a few balls. Professional athletes, professional golfers might show up an hour, hour and a half. But this prep is months in the making now. I mean, it is knowing exactly how far every golf club goes, and knowing exactly how your body is going to perform day to day. It's knowing exactly what your swing is doing. It's knowing exactly what you're putting in your body. These golfers are as knowledgeable as they've ever been. But without factor, and this is exactly what I said a year ago, without any factors to golf, no wind, no rain, no shaved areas around the greens where balls can roll off if they just miss an iron shot, those are the things golf needs to throw a bogey or two at pro golfers. Without bogey, it's an all-star game.
It is.
Without bogey, there's nothing that you can be scared of.
So in lieu of wind, if you don't have the wind, and they had a little rough, thank goodness, last week at Wild Eye Country Club, and you listen, it's rough compared to what it used to be. I mean, let's be honest, in the U.S. Open, I want to see some teeth getting back into the national championship. You know, what they say, a tournament of such desperate importance, as Sandy Tatum once described it. I mean, you want to see the best players identified, not just in the U.S. Open, but week to week as well. I don't want it to be, you know, a three-point contest, as it were, as you said, where nobody's playing defense, including the golf course itself. The golf courses are in pristine condition. They're supposed to be. The athletes are in pristine condition. They're supposed to be. But I also want to see if it has to be a few more trees, if it has to be a little more rough, if it has to be lift cleaning place, you know, doing away with it, or having a stricter interpretation of when you use
twice
that
a year, not 20 times a year.
I feel like the default is to make the players happy. A little too much. The players are
we don't have to coddle them too much.
Right.
You know, you can put a little more teeth into the golf course, put a little more teeth into the rules, you know, a little more John Paramore, who retired from the European Tour when that golf cart was driving up to a green. You know, the players were getting their back straight.
You might not get the ruling.
I just want to see a little bit more of these players having to sweat and have stress and have to struggle. Just a little bit more.
So we talked about this in the office yesterday about the NFL, and it is the most popular sport in America. It's a sport that kind of drives so many things. And we were talking about how we all think we know football. And then when you really dive into football, most football fans don't really know much about the sport. It is so specific, and there are so many things happening, and there's so many players out there kind of going in different directions and understanding offense and understanding defense. We all think we play the same game as the professional golfers do, and we do not. Yeah. I'm going to give you a few examples of this because I tried to play, D. I mean, I tried to play in my 20s. Yeah. I was out there grinding and trying to make money playing professional golf.
Yeah.
And you learn quickly that you're not good enough. But when you go to certain golf courses as a scratch golfer, as a zero handicap, I'm just going to list a few. Remember the concession last year?
I do. Concussion, they call it.
I've played the concession. Yep. It's a place that makes you stressful on every single tee.
Right.
Unless you're a pro golfer. Colin Morikawa shoot 18 under to win at concession. The rating at that golf course is 76.7, meaning that a scratch golfer, his par, if you will, is around 77. I'll take it Erin Hills.
Yeah.
Remember the U.S. Open at Erin Hills? Erin Hills has one of the highest course ratings in America, 77.9. So, again, a scratch golfer is going to, on average, shoot around 78. 16 under with no win, won that by Brooks Koepka. Four players finished double digits under par at a U.S. Open. What about Whistling Straits? Seen Whistling Straits kind of on the peripheral for a long time. We've seen it in a lot of events. The rating 77.2. Jason Day, no win, 20 under par. They see golf courses differently. They prepare for golf courses differently. The golf swing isn't, I hope I find the fairway. It's just, you know, you get over the golf ball and you take it back and you hit it. You know what you're doing because you practice it so much. They're getting better. They're getting more comfortable. They're getting smarter about their own games. Let's not make it easier for those players. Let's try to make it a little tougher on whatever end we have.
I just wonder if that's where we are in a society in terms of sports. Football, all about offense. The rules, you can't even breathe on a quarterback and it's going to be 15 yards. Baseball, home runs, flying over the fence. NBA, incredible three-point scoring, 135 to 132.
Right.
And golf, 34 under, 23 under. Can't wait to see what we have in the California desert this week, which can be a dome, and the players will be taking it deep. And we will see a 57, I believe, on the PGA Tour this season. I think it's where we are in a society in terms of sports. We want big points, high numbers, excitement. You know that if you have a quarterback who's thrown for five touchdowns as Josh Allen did the other night against the Patriots. I mean, that's what people want to see.
You know that's good.
They know that's good. That's rating. Three home runs in a game, that's ratings. Birdies bonanza and eagle bonanza, maybe that's just kind of where we are. But I wonder if the players themselves, and I hope we get some players out, and we will this season, we'll talk to them about what they think. Is the game at their level, has it become too easy where the sweet spot is as big as a Winnebago on those drivers?
I don't always look at the winning score as how I think about a golf tournament, how it played. But I go back to what you opened up with, and it's about the fact that bogeys don't seem to really be in the equation a lot of the time. That fear of the bogey. I need players to understand that if you pull off this golf shot, you mentioned Hideki on the 18th at Wailea, if you pull off this tee shot, if you pull driver and you hit it in the fairway, awesome, you're going to have a chance to make an eagle or an easy birdie. But if you don't pull that shot off, you need to feel like bogey is at least going to be in play. And that is the one thing that I've missed. I don't mind if you shoot 34 under par to win a golf tournament. I'd at least like players to know that the last two or three holes on a golf course, bogeys are there.
Yes.
You can make a bogey if you don't hit a great golf
shot. I want jeopardy. And maybe that's what Augusta National does well, you know, especially on that second nine. Because if you're off just a little bit,
you can make a three and you can make a three.
And that's what I want to say. I just want to see a little more stress for the best players in the world. When I said it, we're going to see some birdies and eagles out in the California desert. PGA West Stadium, of course, La Quinta, California, American Express. You got Abe Anser in the field. Phil Mickelson. Be nice to see him again on the PGA Tour. Patrick Cantlay, defending champ, went to UCLA. Tony Finau, you got Ricky Fowler. Great to see the California kid. Cam Champ, also a native of California. And for more on Cam Champ, we welcome in Rex Hoggard out of La Quinta.
Boy, Damon, you're not going to like this. They put La Quinta back in the rotation this year after it was out of the rotation last year because there was no amateurs, of course, because of COVID-19. And that is the course they destroyed. So, man, you're going to be unhappy on Thursday and Friday based on that conversation that you guys just had. Now, I'm going to say this. A lot like last week's Sony Open, this week's American Express really has a first day of school feel to it. There's a ton of players who are making their first start of 2022 in this week's field. Including that list, as you pointed out, is Cameron Champ. Now, he intended to start his year 2 weeks ago at the Century Tournament of Champions, but before he flew to Maui, he ended up testing positive for COVID-19 and had to withdraw. And he told me this morning, as unfortunate as that was, it might have been a blessing in disguise.
It's really been going around pretty much everywhere where I live. I mean, we've seen it. I thought I just had a little sinus issue. Kind of my whole family had it, and even a couple weeks prior, it was kind of the same deal. And I didn't think I had it. I felt normal. Maybe I thought I had a little sinus infection, but just wanted to test before I left and tested positive. So, which was a good thing for me. You know, I got another week of rest and kind of preparation to, you know, get my year going the next 3 weeks.
And this goes along with the wrist injury that you and I were just talking about. Did you give you a chance to get a little bit more therapy and get a little bit more confidence starting your year?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm at the stage now where, you know, I've been cleared. You know, I suffered a pretty severe injury that I got very lucky with that could have been a lot worse. So, again, I'm just happy that I'm out here. I'm happy that, you know, my recovery has been good. And it's obviously still in the works. But, you know, right now, you know, I'm taking a lot of pauses from the last few weeks, and definitely this week being here too.
How did you injure your wrist, and how long did it take for it to recover?
I injured it actually, I know the date, October 2nd. It was supposed to leave for Shriners the next day. And it was on my property, just a crazy accident that even still, you know, I remember it happening, but when I got up, I don't remember. So, like I said, I got very lucky. You know, I've been out since then. For 2.5 months, I couldn't hit balls. I couldn't really use it, and I couldn't do anything with it. But now, you know, the last couple weeks, you know, I've been cleared. You know, bone is healed, and you know, just trying to work through it.
Now, he also told me afterwards that extra time off really gave his wrist an opportunity to heal, and he's looking forward to this week. Beyond that is the first start of 2022. It's also somewhere where he's had success. He finished tied for 25th here 2 years ago in 2020 in his first start. And as you guys pointed out, he loves the idea of starting his year in golf in a dome.
Did you see Rex Hoggard right there? He's got short sleeves on. Did you see that?
Oh.
Short, you remember those?
Oh.
The one that you can wear them when it's kind of balmy out.
That's what those are.
Yeah, short sleeve shirt. Colin Morikawa's got one on as well. We'll talk Colin Morikawa here in just a bit. Winning majors, WGCs, race to Dubai. What's he got to do in 2022 to have a good to great season? We'll talk about it. Short sleeves. I really like
those. Short sleeves. I'm looking at those.
Get tan on the arms.
Golf Today. Brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by the new Ping Glide Forged Pro Wedges. Get fit today.
Back on Golf Today, last July, Colin Morikawa arrived at Royal St. George's to stay one-time major champion. You know what happened when he left Royal St. George's? Doubled it up. Now he has two majors.
Apparently he's very excited about defending 150th Open.
His game probably going to play at the old course.
I think so. Probably won't find too many bunkers. How about the
DP play okay?
World Tour Championship, overseas, win the race to Dubai. Pulled off Rory McIlroy. I mean, huge trophy.
Yeah, you got to fly private if you get that trophy.
I think you can.
Can't check that.
I think you can.
You don't check that one.
Oh, the year in review. It was a good one. You mentioned the concession. He won WGC Workday Championship there. Won the Open for his second major title and his eighth major start. Is that pretty good? Man, oh, man. He just smiles. He smiles wherever he goes. He just goes about his business. Now he's in Abu Dhabi. This week, Yas Lynx, that have good vibes, being back in the Middle East. Co-favorite, by the way, along with Rory McIlroy, who you mentioned has four runner-up finishes in this event.
Yeah, those odds powered by our friends at PointsBet. You see Colin Morikawa plus 700, Rory as well. Victor Hovland just lingering at plus 1,000. Fleetwood in the field, Shane Lowry, T.O. Hatton, Adam Scott, new putter this week in the field as well. We talk a lot about Colin Morikawa And we enjoy talking a lot about Colin Morikawa. He's so incredible, he's done so many things in his young career. What does Colin have to do in 2022 to have a successful season?
You know, we asked the same question of Rory. You said something green. And I said something major. I'm not going to say Colin has to win a major in 2022. I will say two wins, the Vardon Trophy for lowest adjusted scoring.
Hold on, let me write these down.
The Vardon,
so
yes.
Two wins, okay.
Two wins.
Got it.
Vardon. He hasn't done that yet. And also, I want you to be number one in the world.
That's it.
At some point.
That's it.
Hasn't done that yet. Had a chance at the Hero, and I know it's like the silly season.
Right.
He had a five-shot lead, shot 41. He got engaged that week. He said, listen, I warmed up great. I started out okay first couple of holes, and all of a sudden he couldn't hit a putt anymore. I think it was more than that. I think it was the kind of unspoken pressure that Justin Thomas felt his first chance to be number one in the world. I think there was a little bit of that energy around Colin as well. But I think if he can get to that point, check that box. When you look back on your career, you want to be able to say, yeah, I won this many tournaments
right.
and this many majors, and at one point I was the best golfer on the planet by the math, by the official world golf ranking. So win twice, win the Vardon, and become number one in the world.
Just not high ceiling for Colin Morikawa. Can you get to that?
I'm on the phone with Colin. That's what I'm telling him.
I agree with you on the major thing. I didn't have win a major as
you
a successful
okay.
2022. I'm sure he has that on his list. I'm sure every year he's writing down goals, and it's win a major championship. Colin Morikawa was a great major championship player. We've already seen that in his career to this point. I'm looking at three victories for Morikawa. I'd like him to see him win three times. He did that in 2021. And to me, it's just an improvement at Augusta National. That's the one major championship where Colin Morikawa does not have a top 10, but he's improved. Outside of Jordan Spieth, Augusta usually a place it takes a little bit of time to understand. So to me, it's just kind of continuing on that trajectory at the Masters. It's continuing to understand the golf course and the greens and what that golf course asks of you. Now, let me say this, Dee. We talk a lot about Rory McIlroy at Augusta National. We'll talk a lot about Jordan Spieth at the PGA, and we're going to inevitably talk about Phil Mickelson at the U.S. Open. What if Morikawa wins the Masters? What if he goes out there and wins the green jacket, and all of a sudden we're headed to a U.S. Open at one of the most historical golf courses in our land on this planet Earth with a chance to complete the career Grand Slam? You don't have to go that far back to the last player that won the Masters and the U.S. Open in the same season. Could you imagine what the pressure would be like, how much we'd be talking about this, the noise that would be surrounding the Boston area?
It would be awesome. The Country Club of Brookline, it would be a fantastic story. It would be it's something that we don't have at this point. You mentioned the protagonists that we have that are chasing the career Grand Slam, and people say, you know, Brooks needs a couple as well. As much noise as there should be around Colin Morikawa in his chase for it, there's not yet. Should he put on a green jacket, it would be his third major in 9 starts. It would also be a chance to check one of the most important boxes in the game to complete the career Grand Slam at the National Championship at the U.S. Open just a few hours from where we sit right now. I think he would handle it with a bomb. To hear him speak after tournaments, the way he handles everything that's thrown his way, how quickly he learns to adapt and adjust to golf courses that he's never seen before or never played before. I think he's one of those players whose mind is like a supercomputer. And I just think with his personality, he's very steady. He's very level. He's got a business degree from Cal in addition to a bachelor's degree. He's just someone who seems very, very comfortable with the questions that professional golf asks.
You know, I talked to Justin Rose during the pandemic kind of on a Zoom call. We're talking about the U.S. Open he won. And Justin Rose said something I found very interesting. He's talking about pressure for professional golfers. And I think golfers experience pressure all the time. And Justin Rose said, I get nervous 4 or 5 times a year, and that's it. He was talking about when those moments get to a player. Colin Morikawa, to me, feels like a player that never gets nervous.
Yes.
It doesn't seem like the moment, if you will, rattles him. Even going to the Hero, you're going to have bad days on the golf course.
Yeah.
You're going to have bad Sundays. It's going to happen even if you're an elite ball striker. Started to miss some putts, hit a couple of wayward iron shots, and all of a sudden he wasn't in the conversation again. It also took Victor Hovland making eagles and birdies to kind of run away with that Hero trophy. For me, Colin Morikawa, the improvement at Augusta National would be special. But we do have a very, very cool situation in the majors this year.
Yeah.
If Colin Morikawa or Brooks Koepka win at Augusta National, you're talking about the Country Club and the Old Course as potential spots to complete these career Grand Slams. These players are young, D.
They are.
These are young golfers. This used to be kind of a career thing. And I think these are the two players that you'd almost expect to tick off three at some point.
Yeah, and I think that he probably does get nervous, even if he doesn't show it. I think the cool thing is when you're nervous and you pull off the golf shot. I think that's what these players live for at the highest level. Pressure is a privilege. You want to be on that golf course with a chance to win tournaments or championships. You want to be on that football field with a chance with the clock running down, I guess, except for the Dallas Cowboys, whose clock management was completely out the window. That's a different channel, a different show. But pressure is a privilege. And if you're Colin Morikawa, you love the fact that at this point in your young career, you have a chance to check some very big boxes already.
Imagine coming out of college and people talking about Spider Miller saying this guy's the most talented player on an elite Walker Cup team, right? Yes. This Colin Morikawa guy that we knew about. We knew he did on in college. But to see what he has done already as a professional golfer says to me that Colin Morikawa is a player that when we get to these major championships and these big events and a potential to be world number one again, to me, Colin Morikawa seems like the least stressed guy in the room when these conversations happen.
Very comfortable. There are dreamers at every level of this great game. And still to come, we'll be joined by the most recent recipient of the Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption, Aaron Beverly. We'll tee it up in this year's Genesis Invitational, and he joins us next.
There are cool things in this world, and then there is Tiger Woods tweeting about you. Tiger, jumping on social media, I'm looking forward to welcoming Aaron Beverly. The Genesis Invitational is the 2022 Sifford Exemption. Like me, Aaron learned the game from his dad. I know Charlie Sifford would be proud of Aaron as he makes his PGA Tour debut at Riviera next month. And D, a look at Aaron's bio.
Sac State Hornets.
You worked in Sacramento,
I did.
Eh?
I worked for the Sacramento Bee, but I was not a two-time Big Sky Player of the Year like Aaron Beverly was. Returned to Sac State as assistant coach during the 1920 season. Won APGA Tour in November at Wilshire Country Club and competed in 9 McKenzie Tour events in 2019. And as you mentioned, one of the fantastic Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemptions in to Riviera. Some notables from the past. Some names you recognize. Mm-hmm. Harold Varner III, Joseph Bramah, who went to Stanford alongside a Tiger with on alongside, but a little bit later, Cam Champ, 2018. Willie Mack III getting some run in some PGA Tour events. And there you see him for 2022, Aaron Beverly, who joins us on this Tuesday edition of Golf Today. But congratulations, first of all. What was your reaction to receiving the Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption? It's named for a trailblazer, and you're getting to play in a tournament hosted by Tiger Woods.
I was kind of shocked at first that I was chosen, but it's a great honor to not only be playing at Riviera, but be playing in a tournament that's put on by Tiger Woods and honoring Charlie Sifford. So I look forward to being down there.
Well, you've been on quite a journey. You competed on the APGA Tour in 2021. You finished 5th in Scottsdale, but your season was limited when you came down with COVID. I read you lost 17 pounds. Like, how frustrating and how scary was that for you?
Yeah, it was a wild kind of sequence of events. I was actually coaching our men's golf team, and they were making their first appearance at regionals since I played on the team since 2017. And we tested before we left. I tested negative. We tested when I got there, tested negative. And then after they played the first round, I tested positive. So they had to forfeit their tournament, and I had to drive home. It was by myself 17 hours. And then when I got back was when I lost all the weight, couldn't eat anything, stomach it, was in the bathroom throwing up and just had every kind of issue with COVID. And I don't have 17 pounds to lose. I was all of 190 and lost the 17 pounds. So it was tough, but thankfully I made it through and was able to get back on the golf course and get back to playing good golf.
Aaron, you grew up playing with Cameron Champ. At what age did you start to realize that this kid's got a couple extra gears?
Man, 16. We were playing in Georgia, and I'll never forget this for the rest of my life. I hit a driver, thought I hit it really well, and he grabs his 2-iron and hits it 30 yards past me. And I was like, I looked at my dad and said, man, this kid's a little different, because I hit it far, but he hit it further.
You know, so many of us love this game. Aaron, I'm just curious, what does this game mean to you? What does it give you?
Golf is everything to me. That's why I help coach it now. I play it now since I was 3, and my dad put the club in my hand for the first time. I've been in love with it ever since. It's just the ability to go out there and try to get better every single day
is something that you can't get a lot in life, but golf offers that opportunity, and it's a really special game.
Aaron, after that victory at Wilshire, you said you would have loved to have been able to text your dad, who passed away in 2019. He was a coach, and you talk about the speeches he would give pregame, pumping people up. How often do you hear those speeches in your mind when you're out on the golf course?
Oh, man, all the time. Before every tournament, every round, I would always call him, talk to him. He'd give me, you know, a game plan for the day and motivation that I needed to go out there and play well. So he used to tell me when I was a kid that the movie Remember the Titans was based off him. And I believe I believed it until I was about 12. And then one day I was like, Dad, Denzel, you're not Denzel. So but he was just as good of a coach as Denzel was in that movie. So, he's definitely special to me.
Aaron, I'm curious, you know, the day after Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we're talking about golf a lot and that diversity, your Charlie Sifford Memorial exemption. You've got buddies out there that compete in the Willie Mack thirds of the world. Kind of where do you see this game in terms of diversity and its efforts and kind of growing this tent and making the game look as much like the country as we want it to?
Yeah, I think, like anything, it takes time, but everything's progressing in a good manner at this point, I would say, especially with the APGA Tour now and obviously this exemption, I think, but it's all thanks to guys like Calvin Peet, Lee Elder, Teddy Rose, Bill Spiller, Jim Thorpe, all those guys kind of laid the foundation and paved the way for us to have an opportunity now, because without Charlie Sifford, you wouldn't have, Hideki Matsuyama winning last week, because the PGA Tour used to have a Caucasian only clause. So without him and with all those other guys paving the way, golf wouldn't look the way it does now, and it's definitely headed in a great direction.
Aaron, as you look ahead to Riviera, is there a player that you might bug for a practice round? Is there somebody you're circling that you'd like to get in the mind and maybe get a chance to see how they go about their business?
Yeah, I'm gonna pick the last year's champ, Max Homa. I mean, you gotta go. You got to roll with
smart
the winner.
Man.
And he's, went to Cal, so we have the California connection. But definitely, any advice you can give for somebody who's been successful on the golf course is good advice to me.
All right, I want to leave you with this. Big picture goals, 10 years from now, are you coaching national championships? Are you chasing PGA Tour wins? How do you see your future unfolding?
No, 10 years from now, playing in the Masters, final day Sunday, three-shot lead going into 18, might tee off with a 7-iron, hit another 7-iron, and just coast to the lead. But definitely 10 years from now, seeing myself playing on the PGA Tour.
About that.
Very, very cool. That's a smart approach. Mr. Tiger Woods in 2019, he knew he could make five on the 18th at Augusta National. He played for that five.
Aaron, it's great catching up with you, buddy. Congrats. Enjoy your week at Riviera. We hope to speak to you soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the show.
All